Acquisitions Anonymous, Internet's number one podcast about buying and selling and investing in small businesses. Along the way, we talk about these amazing businesses. And today, me, your host, Michael Gridley, and my co-host, Mills Snell, had a ton of fun talking about a business with a ton of tailwinds that we liked right up until the very end. So stick around for this one. Talked about a pallet business in Florida, and we had a ton of fun. Enjoy it. Hey, Michael here. Want to talk to you about today's sponsor for the episode, which is cloudbookkeeping.com. So Cloud Bookkeeping is actually run by my neighbor, Charlie. So I've met him in person and can attest that he's a real human being and a good person. And what Cloud Bookkeeping does is offer a full suite of bookkeeping services all in the cloud for you around QuickBooks and other technologies that you're using as a small business owner. So if you're interested in getting the bookkeeping part of running a business off your plate and focusing on running your business, Charlie and his team are one to call. They can put together a bunch of other stuff in terms of helping you manage and grow your business besides just bookkeeping, sophisticated reporting, definitely helping you get your QuickBooks online set up in the right way, and a number of things around payroll as well. So definitely know them and recommend them. If you want to find out more about Cloud Bookkeeping, you can go to their website at cloudbookkeeping.com. Reach out to Charlie. I know many of you have, and see if he can help you make your running your business easier and more fun by letting them help with a lot of the bookkeeping solutions. So, and when you call, mention this podcast. It would help us and help Charlie know that we're supporting him as well. So thanks a bunch, and cloudbookkeeping.com as the sponsor for today's episode. Mills, what's up, buddy?
On that note, I got all my politically incorrect things off my chest.
You're hilarious. Well, cool. Well, anything going on exciting in your life? Anything we need to know about?
I mean, it's always exciting. Firefighting. I just got back from Chicago. I hadn't spent time in Chicago in a long time. It was such a fun city. So clean, great green spaces. I wouldn't even consider myself an architecture nerd, but the architecture was amazing. But then I got back and people were like, well, you didn't roam the streets at all, did you? I was like, yeah, I rented an e-bike for like 2 hours and just pedaled around. And they're like, it's like more dangerous than Iraq right now. I had no idea. There's like roaming mobs. Like, people don't go out after dark, apparently, in Chicago right now.
It's super interesting to see how quickly the social media stuff and the mass media can just ruin the reputation of a city. Like San Francisco, for example, you would think like the place is burning down, and I'm sure some neighborhoods are terrible, but in their case, it's like people who live there are like, well, you know, we're still fine. It's not like there's, it's not like it's whatever the name of that Kurt Russell movie was where he goes like back to LA or whatever. Yes. Escape from LA. It's not like that.
It was crazy though. The office vacancy in cities like that is just, there's 15 million square feet of office vacant in Chicago right now. And that's like, that's not even like, people are still, you know, in leases that are 7-year leases. Like, they haven't even renewed, but I wouldn't want to own, you know, a huge office building in a city like that right now.
It's a good time to own industrial and a terrible time to own office buildings. Mm-hmm. So get on the wrong side of stuff. You'll see. Yeah. Well, cool. Speaking of light industrial, we have a deal to talk about.
What a segue.
How about that for a segue? I got skills. I moved all my stuff, so hopefully this will...
It's like a surprise in a box every week. Like, what will Michael have changed with his podcast setup? New mic, new lights, new camera, new screens. I love it.
It's hilarious because I'm changing this light next week. I don't like it. All right. So here, let me read this deal because I think it's very exciting. This is distribution wood products from Broward County, Florida. So where's Broward County? That's like Fort Lauderdale, right?
Yes. Yeah. Fort Lauderdale, Miami. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So it is a biz by sale. So I actually found this on our friend Helen Guo's newsletter. And Helen, I love you. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your last name, but she has a website and a newsletter called SMB Deal Hunter, and she basically like sends her favorite 5 small businesses for sale each week. So pretty fun. And I think we're going to have her as a guest in the future, which I'm excited about.
Awesome.
So, So asking price for this, the picture is a bunch of pallets. Its asking price is $1.4 million. Cash flow is $730,000 and revenue is $1.5 million. So this business supposedly, Mills, are you sitting down, generates nearly 50% cash flow margins. So description, it's been around since 2008, gross revenue $1.5 million. I said that, $150,000 in equipment and $5,000 in inventory. Opportunity, pallet business for sale, move quickly.
All this caps, is a gym. If you're not on YouTube. Opportunity.
Yeah. I'll say it that way. Make a quick offer. You can check out all numbers on DD. This deal will move fast. This company manufactures new pallets with new used woods and repairs used pallets. Business has plus 12 repetitive customers, some of them with current PO established. Sales are increasing. The sale includes machinery, tools, limited inventory, box trailers, forklifts, straight truck, etc. Complete asset list is available. Strategic location, very close to end users. Very profitable business and easy to manage. The business was established 12 plus years ago in same location. The seller is moving out of the country with other type of business, which motivates him to sell, willing to assist the new owner for a smooth transition and for a good amount of time. Should qualify for a Visa 2023 financials based on July numbers. They're located in a 25,000 square foot building, 7 employees. They rent the 25,000 square foot building for $4,200 a month with some open storage and awnings. And they've been there for over 10 years. They differentiate from others with service, higher quality, and specially designed products. Their clients are local from different types of industries, which provide seasonal variations. Other pallet businesses purchase from them. They manufacture new pallets and design pallets for special customers, lots of woods material. They can increase sales by increasing the production with the same equipment. Just placing additional workers or increasing the number of shifts, webpage and social media will also be a plus. They are selling because of other business interests.
We'll train. We'll train for 4 weeks at $0 cost.
Yeah. And, you know, normally, Mills, I'm trying to become a new man. Normally, I would poop on the English written here, but I believe Jorge, who is the listing agent, is doing this in a second language. And as somebody who just got back from Mexico sounding like a moron, I'm going to give him a pass.
Great point. Great point.
It's a second language is really difficult. So kudos to Jorge. He got a lot of the stuff out here. So what do you think?
Oh, man. I mean, one thing that jumps out at me right away is up in the very top title, it says that this business is relocatable. But then they also say that the business is very close to end users and they pay the equivalent of $2 a foot for their industrial space, which I don't care where you are in the country, $2 a foot is way below market. You're not going to move. They also say that they lease the space, but there's no information. The lease expiration just says NA. So they may be month to month. They may have a 20-year lease. We don't know. But yeah, I can't imagine a scenario where this business is relocatable. Also, just the things involved in this business, it would cost a lot of money, a lot of heartache to move this thing somewhere. This is not a relocatable business. It doesn't fit in that category.
They may mean you could relocate it by moving it next door if you wanted
like
to.
Down the street, maybe. But I mean, $2 a square foot even if this is Class C industrial, with like the roof caving in and no HVAC or heating, like $2 a square foot is just so cheap. So I will say pallet-based businesses, pallet manufacturers, pallet repair people. I know a lot of people who have searched high and low for this type of business and they are very hard to find. And I don't think they transact that often. The 50% margins, I think, is probably not accurate when you get down into it. I mean, they can be, you know, notoriously kind of under the radar, surprisingly high margin businesses, but there's no way that this business is actually making that.
Here's my bet, 1,000,000%. I bet the owner is doing all of the sales, all the account management, and answering his phone 24 hours a day dealing with customers. And I bet that's why this is so profitable. Like, I bet he's doing very efficiently 3 or 4 people's jobs.
Yeah.
Is why I think that's really, really such outstanding levels of profitability and all that. Let's make sure we talk about what this business does. Are you and I on the same page about what they do?
I think so. Every major like manufacturer or distributor has to put their things on a pallet to move them. Even if it's you know, cardboard boxes full of widgets. You got to put them on a pallet in order to ship them to a 3PL or to, you know, Target or, you know, Amazon or whatever. And most people, even if you're really, really good at manufacturing metal or wood products or widgets or electronics or anything, the pallets are like one of the lowest value, you know, aspects of what you're doing. You just want to get a pallet and put your stuff on it and focus on your core business. What's weird about pallets is that if you need them, you're responsible right for procuring them. Like my business, we're on the receiving end. We get stuff in on pallets and we throw them away all the time. Or we set them out on the side of the road and people come and pick them up. And it's like, I don't know, they chop them up for firewood or they, you know, use them to build reclaimed furniture or something like that. So it's this weird marketplace where one side of the equation really values the product and the other side doesn't necessarily care. There are some really big, you know, receivers, you know, big industrial folks who they maybe stockpile them and then we'll resell them to somebody like this, or just say, hey, if you'll come take them, like we don't have to pay to put them in a dumpster or something. You know, we just come get, we get 100 pallets a week or something. Just come make them go away. So they're making them, they're repairing them, which are somewhat similar, right? But there's a lot of logistics involved because you got to take, if you have to take 100 pallets to somebody, it takes up a lot of space. It's a lot of, you know, it's not like just throwing, you know, a cup of coffee in your car and driving it across town.
Yeah. Well, in theory, that's a moat also for your business because it's guaranteed to be like a local business. It's kind of the opposite end, but the same benefit as like the people that own quarries, right? Or that own like distributors of like dirt or like this really heavy, like high volume stuff. And I think this is the other end of the spectrum where you're looking at it and you're saying like, oh, this is a big fluffy thing that these pallets, like when I was buying pallets, they're $5, $6, $7 a piece. They're probably 12 or 14 now, you know, 10 or 12 years later. But like you fill a whole flatbed truck with those and like drive them over, like you don't want to be shipping those 500 miles. Like it just, it's going to cost you more to ship them than the pallets are worth. So that's, I mean, I think that's a big benefit. If you can find a geographic niche, maybe like these guys have, lock up the customers, you know, you could potentially have a pretty nice business.
Yeah. Yeah. And who knows, right? I mean, it, you don't necessarily get a ton of information, but I mean, it's in Broward County. So like there, this is not automotive manufacturers that you're selling pallets to. Like there's something, some maybe mix of businesses, and we don't really know if there's any kind of industry, you know, concentration. We don't know if there's like a sector concentration, but this is fairly, you know, fairly run of the mill. This is not finished carpentry. You're not building cabinets. You're not building furniture. These things are kind of rough and tumble. But it's like constantly there's give and take, right? In terms of pallets. And this is maybe a little bit nerdy, but the best pallets are overbuilt and they usually are built to whatever the specifications are. If you're just moving something that's super lightweight and, you know, and bulky, the pallet doesn't have to be that substantial. We just got in like a ton of really heavy weights for this roofing thing that's really specific. And they were put on pallets that really they were probably not engineered for. And the pallets broke as we received the stuff. And it's just a huge pain, you know? So I don't know though that like the switching costs, there's probably not a lot of switching that happens. Like if you're a manufacturer in Broward County and you're buying pallets from this business, they just have to like really quit servicing you and quit showing up with more pallets when you need them for you to go like find somebody else. Maybe even if they're nominally cheaper, you're just not switching this kind of thing all that much. It's probably not a ton of volume.
Well, let's, I think that's a good place to go next with this one. Like stuff to like about this deal, right? Like living in Florida is not that horrible compared to some of the other things. Like we did that shooting range in like the middle of nowhere, North Carolina. It's like, no, thank you. So it's got that going on, like tons of tailwinds for sure, right? This is definitely a market where as more and more stuff is getting done here in the US and more goods are getting shipped around. You know, you definitely have a situation where there's tailwinds to this kind of stuff. And you're seeing in the light industrial real estate market, the heavy industrial real estate market, like they're all benefiting hugely from this stuff, kind of the opposite of what we were talking about earlier in the, you and I talking about, like, oh, it's being in the office market is not that great right now. So there's that going on. Definitely appears that there's things to like around the repetitive customers that they have. They've got these 12 customers that they've had for a long time. Brand, the staff is there, all that kind of stuff. Anything else that you like about this? It's been around for 15 years, so I like that too.
It's relatively low tech too. I mean, you don't need, you know, CNC routers. You don't need plasma cutters. You don't need real specialty equipment. I mean, you can, they probably have some table saws, some band saws, some miter saws, and, you know, nail guns and compressors. Like, this is not a overly, you know, engineered type business. So, you know, I worry in a lot of cases like this, when you have this kind of, you know, owner operator type business that's, you know, probably been very founder centric, really high margins like this, you just kind of know that the deferred CapEx, like if this was a, you know, real intensive, asset intensive, you know, manufacturing process, I would be worried about like that one guy's maybe like knows how everything is like duct taped together and like, you know, just how to make it run, you know, and you like have to go kick it a certain way so that the machine will, you know, not break down. This is relatively lower cost items. These are not, you know, big asset intensive production capabilities. So I like that because you avoid at least somewhat of the ticking time bomb. You do have, you know, they say a box trailer, you know, forklift. These are things that are, you know, relatively, you know, small costs in the grand scheme of things.
I also like there's relatively low regulatory requirements. Like there's no licensing here. You're not dealing with, you know, we've talked about why I don't like, being in the child healthcare or child care issue. It's like, you know, it's very rare that you're going to put out a pallet and like put some 6-year-old at risk. So I think that all has a huge benefit. The other thing that I like about this also, like you're just talking about it, I consider it like if you're going to staff your manufacturing thing with people and also equipment, like there's not like a bunch of random like weird things you're trying to recruit from here to get. And you can buy all your equipment at Home Depot. Like, it's like, okay, cool. Like, yeah. I don't have to worry about like all the random crap out there.
You mentioned too, like, this is a business that is in the path of progress. Like, we are moving more things in bulk, right? It's not, you know, becoming obsolete. When I was doing M&A advisory work, I would always drive by on the interstate in a certain part of South Carolina, this massive pallet manufacturing place. And we used to joke that the stock in their yard, like how many pallets they had, because you could drive by and you could see, I mean, it was just thousands and thousands of them and they're stacked, you know, like 40 feet in the air. We always kind of joked that there's almost like some kind of economic indicator, you know, it's like a leading indicator as to like how many pallets they have stocked up versus how many, you know, they're moving and like what their relative inventory levels are. Right. But all in all, this business is definitely, you know, Amazon's not going to come eat their lunch. You know, e-commerce sales are going to drive more of what they do in general, right? Unless they have some really specific customer that we, you know, aren't aware of right now. But I like that it's, you know, it's not a dying industry where you're like, maybe I'll just be the last holdout and just milk it for all that I can forever. And then, you know, never really exist anymore. Like, I don't know, wagon wheels or something like that, you know, 100 years ago.
Buggy whips.
Yeah.
Do you need video content for your business that doesn't suck? Double Jump Media is your one-stop shop for high quality, highly engaging video content. They have over a decade of experience producing great, memorable videos for their clients across North America and beyond. And those clients have taken those videos and turned that into millions more in sales for their business to help them grow and achieve their goals. And a distinguishing characteristic that sets them apart is they have a small team that does everything in-house. So what you see on their portfolio page and what you see on their website, that's what you're going to get. They do everything soup to nuts, consulting, scripting, strategy, production, post-production, helping you put it all together to produce something that is just as top-notch as your brand. So whether you're rebranding an existing product, you've just bought a business, or you're trying to grow the one that you have, the Double Jump team is one that is down to clown. By the way, they wrote that down to clown thing. I know what it means, but it sounds awesome. So to get in touch with them, visit doublejump.media, fill out their form, tell them that we sent you, have an introductory call at no cost to you, and figure out what's best for your business. They're great folks and can help you on your journey in producing amazing video content to help meet your business needs and goals. And thanks to them for sponsoring today's episode. So about 20 years ago, there was a whole idea to get away from wood pallets for mm-hmm. a number of reasons. One is they're like, they keep breaking and they don't have a lot of longevity. So what I have seen and what started to happen back then was they would do these like plastic molded pallets.
Yes. Yep.
And you're like, at first blush, you're like, this is a great idea. We could spend like, $50 on one of these and it'll last for 10 years. But it kind of neglected the fact that so many times you're using pallets, you deliver the load and you don't want to wait around to get your pallet back. Yeah. Right. So it only exists in a very specific like band of use cases. Like you're a big shipper, you're Amazon or HEB, which is our big grocer here in San Antonio. Like I'm sure they're using that stuff over and over again because it makes sense and they control their back and forth. But for like normal businesses, like I think you're exactly right. I don't see pallets going anywhere, which is a good thing.
And I think usually those specific cases are like, okay, if it's food, if it's a perishable food product or something like that, then you don't want the risk of, you know, wood breaking, splintering, you know, the, you know, introduction of foreign objects, you know, into a regulated manufacturing process. There was also this thing that came up, as pallets became like really in vogue for like woodworking and, you know, like making reclaimed furniture and stuff like that, there were a lot of people who were going and sourcing these incredible exotic hardwoods, because a lot of these pallets, if things are being shipped from overseas, they're just cutting down whatever tree, you know, is readily available. Just like we're cutting right. down, you know, southern yellow pine, you know, in the Southeast and, you know, making pallets out of it. But people would go like scour these yards of pallets and would go find this incredible wood and kind of cut it down. And so it's kind of like that idea, right? Supply and demand. We're just going to make this stuff with whatever's, you know, nearby. But these things also come, they get imported. Everything that, you know, gets put on a container is usually palletized, unless it's just stacked, you know, high in the pallet, in the container. But we end up with a lot of like random stuff. But that also introduces some, just, you know, risk, like, you know, chemicals and contaminants and formaldehyde and all kinds of things that end up in,
yeah,
you know, that process.
Well, we would get China, you know, containers all the time, and they don't put stuff on pallets because it doesn't make sense to mm-hmm. do it when you're loading the pallet. But the one thing they did do with all that wood you're talking about, there were like regulations where it had to be fumigated, mm-hmm. like coming in the United States. They wanted to make sure, I guess, the Asian something beetle like got yes. in here through a pallet that way. So, yeah, they're all fumigated and you open it up and you're like, yep, smells like cancer.
yeah.
that's the reaction whenever you open up one of those things.
Wood products is super right. interesting. Just really quick. So I have a friend who was in the wood product space, sold a monster business. They made light poles, utility poles, which they basically just cut down straight trees and then treated them with creosote and sold them to utility companies. But like you have, you know, in terms of wood manufacturing, I almost wouldn't call this a distributor, right? They say distribution wood products, but that makes them sound like they're a distributor. They're like a very small niche manufacturer or assembler more yeah. than really manufacturer. But you have things like utility poles, super niche and very, very hard to like high CapEx requirements to get into the space. Very, very large customer relationships that are sticky and it's kind of semi-regulated. Basically, like nobody wants to be the guy who goes and tries to buy a new utility pole. Like you need to use the guy everybody uses and has always used. And there's a perpetual need because they rot and like a hurricane comes through. And then all of a sudden, like the, you know, the co-op, you know, electrical provider needs like 1,000 light poles tomorrow.
Yeah.
But same with railroad ties and, you know, other kind of semi-permanent, you know, wood products. It's interesting. This is less permanent, less CapEx intensive, lower price point. But I do like kind of lightly manufactured, lightly value added wood products.
And a moat around bulk. So, mm-hmm. all right. So that's the stuff we like about this deal. Let's go into a long list of things that we are going to hate about this deal. And I'll tell you my first one.
Yeah, go ahead.
My first one is that you are going to run into a seller who has a skewed vision and value for this business, because to them, they're going to see it as you as a buyer should buy his business that is operating at 50% cash flow margins, which is a mirage, because he's actually doing, in my view of what's going on here, three jobs himself. So this business is not a $730,000 a year business. This business is really like a $400,000 a year business mm-hmm. with the owner still working full time in it, because I guarantee this owner is being a hero in the background, managing all the staff, like doing all the HR, like this person's on the hustle. And so I think that's the first thing you're going to run into with this deal is just like, oh, like you're going to have to convince the owner of this business. There's a bunch of hidden profits that he hasn't been accounting for and hidden costs he hasn't been accounting for. But anyway, that's my first complaint.
I 100% agree. And I think those things are definitely true. I still think the margins are like high, even when you factor in all that. And based on some of the other like clues in this listing, I would not be surprised if like there's some ERTC, you know, like one-time income that's included in the cash flow number where you're like, oh, well, yeah, okay, of course, there's $150,000 one-time, you know, improvement to, you know, net income that is not sustainable and won't repeat into the future. Or like we saw it, you know, when PPP was coming out, everybody was trying to like add back, you know, their PPP loan and get credit for that as like a free cash flow, you know, multiple, but it's just, you know, you can, but I would not be surprised if there's also something like that happening.
Another thing that's really interesting, this line of 2023 financials is based on July numbers. It would not surprise me if this business broker took a good July for them and has multiplied that July by 12.
Oh, and like, also, right? Like what if most of their revenue, like what if 60, you know, 70% of their revenue happens in the first 6 months of the year? And then you go back and you look and it's like, it's always this seasonal. You've just straight annualized 6 months, but you can put together that actually the second half of the year is going to be very slow. The other issue is that, I mean, this business is 15 years old and it only does $1.4 million, you know, $1.5 million in revenue. So, you know, is it going anywhere? Maybe not. But is it going anywhere? Also, you know, like it's probably not growing. The trajectory is maybe flat for recent history.
There's these epochs in the way a business grows, right? And how big you can get until you start to change your skills as a CEO. And so, you know, in my model of the world, there's this ability where you as a single manager CEO hiring, you know, the wagon wheel structure of running a company where you're the sole manager, you can top out somewhere around $1 million and $1.5 million in revenue, right? If you just do rough numbers. And that of course differs by industry, but this smells exactly like that. Like I bet there's like whatever number of employees there are, there's seven total employees. I bet there are seven people who cut wood and one owner CEO who does everything else. Mm-hmm. And that's why this business never got any bigger. Yeah. So, you know, and unfortunately the seller is probably going to look at it as, well, that's how you run a business. Like, are you crazy? Like, and really I can't blame them, right? Like, if you go to most people in the world and you say your whole job is to service 12 clients and make sure and then manage these people who are cutting pallets and driving trucks around, and you're going to make $700,000 a year. It's kind of like, well, sounds pretty good to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, the work doesn't sound very fun. So I can't even blame them for running the business this way. But as a buyer perspective, it makes it a little like,
yeah,
a little tough.
I think this is a perfect case of like price determines my due diligence. You know, you could get in and find that this business is really making maybe $500,000 or $600,000 a year in SDE and go, okay, it's trading probably appropriately. And your due diligence, you almost have to be prepared in this type of deal, in this scenario, for like no working capital to be transferred at close, right? This seller is going to die on the hill that the cash is mine, the receivables are mine, and I will handle the payables myself. And those are really hard battles to fight. But my guess is that if you get in, best case scenario, the earnings are there, you need to be prepared to kind of pony up on a lot of things that, you know, you might, if you were paying 4 or 5 times for an asset, you know, you would maybe have a little bit more wiggle room on.
Well, and this size thing, you're going to have to do a lot of work if you want to grow it. Or maybe you're the right person that wants to buy this and you're happy to just live the lifestyle this guy lived. But guess what he's not doing, the owner of this thing? He's not going on a 2-week cruise. Yeah. Like, it's just not, you're not stepping away from a business like this. The relatively good news is you can do some of it remotely, but even still, like, you have to be in the office every day running this business. Like, it's not a good work-life balance like thing, because somebody's got to be in there managing the guys doing the cutting and the screwing these pallets together. and taking customer phone calls.
And I think, like, probably a lot of their value is we show up, you know, at the drop of a hat, and we bring you pallets when, you know, you call us screaming that you need them.
It sounds like South Florida, listed by a broker who doesn't speak perfect English. This sounds like the standard, like, beautiful thing about America, which is immigrants come in and build a beautiful life for themselves. It would not shock me if, you know, this is an immigrant from Colombia or Guatemala or something like that, and just come in and found a niche and just killed it and is living the American dream. So I just want to, like, I don't know if we're allowed to clap for people, but it's just like, this is why, you know, why, for in many cases, immigration is beautiful, and the way it's, you know, it's a feature and a bug that it's hard to get into America, but it's like, this is why America works. Like, this is great. Like, I'm super stoked about this.
I wish we had Heather on for this one, because the financing on this is kind of interesting. There's not a huge asset base. I don't know what you could actually borrow, you know, to get this deal done, which I think there is probably some level of third-party debt that you could put on this, even though it is a little bit small, mainly just because of the price, right? But you're not putting 10, 20% down. You're bringing a lot of cash to the table. And there's always these situations that are fascinating to me, which is the people who have the money to do this deal are smart enough not to do this deal.
Right.
You know, like, the guy who could stroke a $700,000 check is smart enough to go, this isn't really the business I want to be in. And I don't know that there's enough runway to realistically quadruple or 10x the size of this business. And so that's not the best use of my $700,000.
Yeah. And it's also in a weird place in the SBA. Not, you know, you could maybe get SBA because, you know, of all the personal guarantees and stuff like that. And, like, anyway, it's like on the small side where it's just like, if I'm going to, like, pledge my house and my net worth to do an SBA loan, like, and I give up, risk my whole life, I'm going to do it for a bigger, more stable business than this. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, how hard do you think it is to start one of these businesses?
From a capital standpoint, not that hard. From a customer relationship standpoint, I mean, you can drive around and get an idea based on, you know, what size building they're in, whether or not they're a potential customer. And you could always, you know, say, hey, I want to start selling you pallets. Can I win your business? Can I, you know, undercut, you know, whoever you're using and promise you that I'll show up, you know, whenever you need me, and really just get hungry and hustle. You don't start off, you know, with $1 million in year one. You probably don't get to $500,000 in year one, but also,
right,
you know, your upfront cost, you could probably do for, you know, under 150 grand instead of 700, you know, or $1 million, $1.5 million.
It would not surprise me that if this business started with the guy who's the CEO now and is selling it, it would not surprise me if it started with him and his own miter saw, like, mm-hmm. in the back of an apartment building somewhere.
Yeah.
He just built it up over time.
Yeah,
again, or he could have
worked at one of these places, right? And they were having problems getting pallets. That's how a lot of these, like, wonderful businesses get started, is they're like, hey, could I do, like, a side gig in addition to my W-2, and I'll provide some pallets? And then, you know, a few years goes by and all of a sudden he's like, I'm going to leave my job because I can do this for 10 people and make a fantastic living.
Yeah. Well, kudos to America. I'm on a collision course, by the way, to eventually own a warehouse with, like, quiet air conditioning and just, like, all kinds of video sets. That's my thing. I was in a building yesterday. I was like, oh, I should totally buy this and, like, turn it into, like, Gridley's Media Playground. It should be amazing.
It's like the Dude Perfect headquarters where they can just do trick shots inside a building all day.
Just do them all the time. That's what it was funny. I went to, like, a business mastermind, which has, there's like a 2-day conference, which you may know whose it was, but I was talking to another creator there of a person who's making a lot of content, and he's like, man, these things give me so much anxiety. Like, I don't want to go to a big cocktail party for 2 days. And I was like, oh man, I totally feel you. Like, I'd rather be at home in my office, like, thinking about business and, like, recording videos and returning emails and mm-hmm. doing all that stuff. And he's like, you too? I was like, yeah, there's a reason people call Twitter the place where introverts go to be extroverted. Mm-hmm. It's pretty true. So anyway, I don't know how I got there, but I would definitely want like a lair. That's what I really want. Yeah. Like a video production lair. Cool. All right. So back to this deal. It seems like the other thing is, it seems like this would just be one that should just trade to some, you know, there should be a kid or a nephew that he's just like, yeah, just like do this and pay me. I'll seller finance 100% of it for you.
Or, I mean, if you're in Broward County and, you know, you're scrappy and you're hungry, I mean, this business, you know, over the near term, it does not have to be all roads lead to the owner. But again, it just depends. You could, you know, make a quick offer. You can check all numbers in on due diligence, you know, as the broker says. You're going to know within 30 minutes, you know, of getting this information if the cash flow is actually there. And that's like the pass fail of whether or not this goes anywhere and actually if there's anything to this.
It's a good space to be in. I mean, if you're going to pick a space to go explore, like pallets and the tailwinds here, just it's good. I mean, this is much better than some of the e-com stuff that we've looked at and worth digging into for sure.
Yeah.
So. All right. So it sounds like neither one of us wants to do this deal. It's not a good one for the Acquisitions Anonymous first business purchase partnership, but is this a reasonable asking price? Do you like this? It's like just under 2x cash flow theoretically.
Yeah. Like I think that honestly, the probably perfect scenario here is there's a wealthy guy in Fort Lauderdale who has a couple of kids. And there's one of them who is like, I don't want to go to college. I just want to like get into business like you, dad, you know? Or you, mom. And the parents are like, hey, we would help you. We'd help finance this. We'd help get you into this business and you're going to run it. And it is like infinitely better than, you know, buying a route of, you know, gumball machines or, you know, window washing or something like that. Like, I think this has a ton of differentiation than, you know, the typical kind of entry point of, hey, I want to get my feet wet and I want to try, you know, some business, so to speak. So I think there is a buyer out there at which this price probably makes a ton of sense if the cash flow is real.
Yeah. I bet you the books are a nightmare.
Oh my gosh. There's no doubt. And like the amount of things, it's probably like reported on the tax return, $300,000 a year in net income, and the actual, you know, like when you factor in the cash and, you know, the recycling money that they get, all this different stuff. It's probably that's probably how they get to that.
This is one of the ones where there's like, there is no way the bank account reconciles to the tax return.
Yeah.
Like 0% chance. So, and I know it's that way with most businesses, because accounting, it turns out, is really difficult to have it 100% accurate. But I guarantee there's like some weird like, oh yeah, that bag of money, we forgot to create an invoice for that.
Yeah, just all intentionally.
Oh, who knew?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we don't take credit cards type move, or we don't do invoices. You just pay cash.
Yeah.
We had a guy once who was a vendor, and we're like, he's like, I'm not taking a check. We're like, okay. And we're like, he's like, I want cash. I'm like, okay. And we're like, look, you should know we're filing a 1099 on you. Like, that's just how it works. Like, we have your social security number. We have everything. We're filing a 1099. So they know. Mm-hmm. It's just up to you to decide if you want them to know that they know that you know.
Yeah. He's so, like, okay, the price just went up.
Yeah. He's like, oh, okay, maybe we'll take a check. Mm-hmm. So anyway. Okay, well, cool. This is a good one. Any other closing thoughts on it? I took down the share, so
I really do want to know. If somebody gets the sim, please let us know. I'm dying to know if the cash flow is real or how fluffed up it is.
Yeah, it's a good space. This just doesn't smell like the right opportunity or that exciting. Mm-hmm. So, but look, if you're some rich dad and you want to do what Mill said and train your kid to really learn business, this is, they'll have to work their ass off to make this business work. And, yeah, it's a rough one. It's a rough one. So cool, man. All right. Well, we'll close it down there. Thanks everybody for listening today. If you enjoyed this, it was good to spend time with you, Mills.
Likewise.
I miss you and your beard more than you know. And it was super fun. We'll click stop on this one. And if you enjoyed this, tell your friends about it. We continue to grow the podcast. We're creeping up on 1 million downloads a year, which is pretty nuts considering where we started when it was like, when we first started, it was like, is this thing on? Like, how's our level of podcasting? And we're doing great from here. So thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.